In the podcast you're about to hear, we are going to talk about the recent chaos surrounding Ravi Zacharias. And this is a topic that has some maturity required. And so if you have kids listening, you might want to hit pause and come back to it at a time when you don't.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And before I introduce our topic for today, Bob, you have some reviews or some encouragement you want to read to us?
Yeah, I want to read you guys some emails we've gotten recently.
And people like us?
People like us. We always tell the listeners, hey, you know what? When you give us a nice review, it obviously helps other people find the podcast. That's how the podcast world works. So we always say, hey, leave us a nice review. Here's some things people wrote about us on Apple Podcasts, where we have a 5-star rating.
Ooh,
wow.
How cool is that? That's nice. Listen to this person. I never used to be excited about Wednesdays, but this podcast has changed that. Keep up the great and meaningful conversation.
That's great.
I love it.
Wow.
Love it that we're helping a guy like Wednesday. I'm grateful for the topics, the honesty, the background research that is done, the experience brought to the discussions, the willingness to admit errors and correct them, and the heart behind this podcast. It's been a privilege to listen to the Wednesday Conversation for the past few years. You're laughing because there actually is no background research.
It just means Wikipedia works.
Hey,
wow.
Okay. We are literally reading two books on this podcast right now.
Give me a break. I will admit we've got much better.
Podcast listeners, every once in a while, we just shoot from the hip. That, you know, that does happen, but mostly there's a fair amount of like the topic we're going to do today. We've done some reading.
This is true.
All right. Lots of good, comments on Apple Podcasts. Those were a few of them. Here's a couple emails that I've gotten actually just this week from Matthew in Kentucky. Shout out to Matthew. He says, I want to thank you for putting out the Wednesday Conversation podcast and to encourage you in those efforts. I serve as a lay leader.
Props.
At such and such church. We face some challenges due to current events and controversies within American politics and evangelicalism. In searching for some resources, I came across some of your Wednesday Conversation podcasts on CRT, white privilege, and George Yancey's book, Beyond Racial Gridlock. These assisted me greatly in analyzing those issues. I'm particularly thankful for your approach, being willing to ask difficult questions and to seek wisdom from God's word in answering them. Here you go, Chris. More recently, I've enjoyed the bobbing discussions. I bought the Wonderful Works of God hearing last month's introduction, and now I'm working my way through it. There you go. Another Bovink reader joining us. Props to Matthew in Kentucky.
And props to Matthew in Kentucky for being a lay elder.
That's right.
We know that those guys
carry some freight.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Here's some feedback from Andrew, a local listener who listened to our recent episode called What Just Happened, where we talked about the last 3 months since the presidential election. He had an interesting insight. He said, hey, you talked about articles that come up on our phones and how we get caught up in those. He says, I wonder if my anxiety can get caught up in particular outcomes. So he says, I'm realizing I have this anxiety that I can't control the outcome, but I'm still emotionally attached to the outcome, whatever it is. And so it was interesting that he said he's basically observing perhaps dying to self means dying to outcomes that we want. So what he's saying is, hey, I don't think people are just attached to a particular figure or a particular thing they want. They get emotionally attached to the outcome they're hoping for instance, Trump winning or Biden winning or whatever it might be. I thought it was really interesting just to hear some feedback from a listener who thought more deeply about their own sort of attachment to outcomes based on that podcast. So Andrew, thanks for reaching out and sending us an email. So, hey, listeners, we like to hear from you, and we actually sometimes take your feedback into account, and it shapes how we think and what we talk about and the issues we take up. And so thanks for reaching out. And in that vein, a listener this week sent us an email and asked us to talk about this topic, which isn't a fun one.
Yes. So today we're talking about Ravi Zacharias.
Dusty, you want to get...
Wah, wah.
I mean, most people, I think, will be familiar with what's going on here, but there might be some listeners who aren't or who haven't paid attention to this story. So, Dusty, you want to give us the brief, sad flyover of what we've learned in the past few weeks?
The brief flyover is Ravi Zacharias was a really well-known apologist in the faith and was globally known for his work in Christian apologetics primarily, and died last year of cancer. And then in the last, the last probably 6 weeks or so, this has come out that Ravi Zacharias was involved in a lot of sexual misconduct and, according to some sources, harassment and into even coercion and abuse.
Yeah, it's a sad, sad story, and one that has been sort of, well, for me, it triggers a lot of cynicism because I hate when things like this happen, because I feel like, oh, here's a person I really appreciated their ministry, had a sense of thankfulness and trust, and then you learn things that you wish you didn't have to learn about someone. And it's even sadder that he's already died. And so I'm feeling for these women who are bringing forward stories of how he misused and abused their trust. And there's just no way to bring restoration to that. There's a sense when someone's alive, at least there can be some sense of justice that they have to face what they've done. And in this case, here's a man who got away with it for a long time and then he's passed on. And now not only do his victims have to live with that legacy, but then his whole ministry is basically sort of tarnished. And in fact, there's questions about whether the Ravi Zacharias International Ministries will even continue to exist at all. To their credit, though their board did not initially take the allegations seriously, they did, as a result of a Christianity Today article last year, hire a firm to do a thorough investigation and have, I think, to their credit, again, though there was missteps in the beginning, they released the full report unedited and just said, "Hey, world, here's what we learned." And so seems like they're taking steps to try to put everything out in the light and say, "Hey, we're not trying to honor our founder by keeping things secret or by letting this be an internal report. Here you go. Read it in all of its sordid detail."
Which I did do. Which
yeah, you did.
I usually don't do that because I'm like, well, that's a terrible thing to go read. I'd rather read something better. I did actually read it because I had the time to read it this past weekend. And it's very disheartening, since most of you won't go read that. For your light reading, here's some of the things that were in there. Ravi had more than 50 individuals, that firm interviewed more than 50 individuals, more than a dozen massage therapists. There were over 200 therapist contacts in his phones. He had multiple phones. And then in those interviews, just disheartening things came out. So it's a very full, thorough report, which I do give them props for hiring somebody like that to go and do the investigative work.
In high school and college, I was a huge fan of Ravi Zacharias, really into apologetics, really appreciated his voice and his approach. And so this, I remember first reading about the accusations, I don't know, when they came out prior to all of this, and it was much more controversial. And it was one of those things that just kind of passed through my brain because it was like, oh, seems like a lot of different leaders are being accused of things. And so it didn't really register and didn't think much of it other than like, wow, I hope that's not true. And so then when this came to light and it became more and more clear that that this indeed was the fact of how he was living his life, it was both heartbreaking, but also I found more and more just getting angry. And so even as, you know, you guys described, to their credit, they did this. I'm like, you guys are being generous. and I think you're right. To a degree, they're at this point, they're not, it doesn't seem like they're trying to hide anything. And they're just like, let's just put it all out. And they're not doing damage control per se. But as I've, a number of articles have noted, they got to this place because they were basically, their hand was forced and the time for integrity was
4 years ago,
Yeah. And they completely botched that. And so, while let's be grateful, definitely be grateful for how they now are, let's just shine the light and let's not try to hide or, dance or spin anything. I do think, yeah, you guys, your integrity, there's no integrity here to stand on in the sense of like, hey, look how good of job we've done. Like this should be in some ways just hanging their head in shame here. So I'm going to try to talk on this podcast helpfully, but there's anger on a number of levels, that will probably come out.
And there should be. And yeah. I think what I want to acknowledge is simply that I do think we need to say when someone hasn't done the right thing in the beginning and then they are very thorough, like they don't try to say, oh, don't worry, we're working on it. But they just sort of like go all in on and try to be very transparent. I agree with you, Chris. There was huge missteps 4 years ago. I'm just thankful that now they seem to be very forthcoming, and I agree that it's too late.
But at the same time, they could keep doing this dance, and they're not. So we just praise God that at this point it is a full open transparency. Light is being shown on this, and hopefully whatever sense of justice and restitution in this, you know, humanly speaking, whatever that can look like, can happen now. And so you are right. I mean, there is a kind of a tough both and in this situation where a lot of times that's how these things are.
Yeah. My thought on that is, yes, it is too late, but at the same time, I do appreciate, I say props to them for doing the thorough investigation and hiring the firm. I think when you're based on what you hear about what Ravi did with these women, the system in which those people were working for him and working for the ministry were also probably under a certain type of spell themselves. Right. So, I guess I was looking at that from the perspective of, man, if I was under that spell, so to speak, air quotes, it might take me some time to come to, I'm not apologizing for them.
No,
I'm just saying I get it if they're under that same spell.
You mean the leaders of the ministry, board and whatever?
Yeah.
That they're sort of like, there's a certain culture that's present that it's hard for them to see outside of. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Right. Yeah. I'm saying based on what you hear in these interviews with these women, that's who he was. Also in a different type of leadership in his organization.
Deceptive.
Yeah, deceptive.
Two-faced, yeah.
And so it probably takes some time to go, oh, that's weird. And I didn't realize I was under that, you know. I didn't necessarily feel the anger as much as you might, Chris, because I wasn't actually into apologetics as much as I was disheartened. Ravi came and spoke at my college. I had been a Christian 3 years, which was really the first year where I was really considering full-time vocational ministry. So, you know, I was just taking notes from everybody I saw. And I remember thinking, man, this dude is solid. And not I want to be like him when I grow up, but kind of like this is what ministry success kind of looks like, you know? And I really appreciated his apologetic work because unlike probably you, Bob and Chris, that's not my angle. So I was actually even probably deeper appreciative of the kind of work he was doing. So yeah, I've been really discouraged and disheartened. The other thing I'll say is I was disheartened just when this happened, because it seems like the cynicism that you mentioned, Bob, it seems like at least once a year, we have to talk about some ministry person torpedoing their life. And I just would like to go a year without doing that.
Bethany, what are your feelings and thoughts about this as you hear the story?
I didn't actually really, I mean, I knew who Ravi Zacharias was, but I didn't. And I knew he was like a bigger name, I think, among certain circles. And I didn't really run in those circles. So, I mean, I think I was just really, it was a mixture of like, and I'm sad to say this, but like not being surprised. And also like you, Chris, like just feeling really angry, like for a number of things, mostly I'm thinking about like the victims. And I was just telling Travis before we recorded this, like even his wife and his daughters, just the betrayal that they must be feeling. And he's already passed away. And that almost, it just feels so unfair to them. I think just a mixture of sadness and anger, but also probably cynicism of just not being surprised that this happened. And
one of the things I struggle with in these situations, keeping perspective, is this happens and I think, man, why are we so bad at this? Why are evangelicals so terrible?
We are.
We have to feel that, because we're terrible at this. But then I also have to take a step back and go, hey, for every one Ravi Zacharias, there are 10 ministry leaders that you and I have never heard of who are faithfully laboring as pastors and as lay leaders and others in doing good gospel work. So we can't let this completely color all evangelical work, but at the same time, why are we so bad at this? Why is it that yet another, and not just that he fell into sin, but the institutional structure around him did not hold him accountable. Mm-hmm. That's where I think a lot of my anger is too, is like, you know, yeah, he fell into sin. And that was, in some ways, as people pointed out, this is more than just, oh, he had an affair. I mean, he was a sexual predator, but there was an institution around him that did not hold him accountable, refused to hold him accountable. And he was able to play and manipulate. And that's probably a whole 5 podcasts in that, but that's one of the things that just jumps out at me is, why is our institutional structure within evangelicalism so terrible at this kind of thing?
I saw like a couple tweets and I don't even remember what they said, but I feel like it probably has something to do with this celebrity pastor like persona that just is kind of rampant, I feel like, in evangelical culture. I don't know if that's it for sure.
No, it's certainly another expression of sort of a person that has a big platform. And because of that, they sort of seem to gain a lot of latitude from the people who are around them to sort of like do their thing in ways that lack a certain kind of oversight or a certain kind of fellowship, even, you might say. Mm-hmm. Our friend Femi Oshinui wrote a piece for the Gospel Coalition Africa that we'll post in with this podcast. And Femi says, Ravi is one of 5 individuals who have most shaped my mind and heart with regards to Christian ministry. And he mentions that Ravi had a big ministry in Africa, that lots of Christians in Africa really appreciated his ministry. And so Femi's sort of answering the question that the listener asked us, which was, hey, how are we supposed to reckon with this? When something like this happens, can we still believe anything this person said to us or taught us, or do we sort of have to throw all of that out? I think that's what a lot of us feel is like, if I've benefited from someone's ministry, and then I discover that there's deep, dark, deceptive wickedness under the surface, that creates a sense of maybe cynicism or at the least just sort of confusion. And Femi is trying to sort of speak to some of that and talk about how do we tackle and handle our own feelings in a moment like this. But he mentions in his article that part of Ravi's pattern here was he would travel over 200 days a year. And Femi mentions in this article, he says, hey, it's really hard to be a faithful member of a local church when you're gone for 2/3 of a year. And I do think that's part of that celebrity complex is you tend to have people who, rather than being a part of the body, almost sort of like hover above and serve the wider church, but there's not a deep connectedness to a place and to a people. And that does seem to be part of the challenge here. It's part of the problem.
Yeah. This doesn't exclusively happen in parachurch organizations or ministries kind of revolving around a particular guy, but there is something I think within those paradigms that if it's not relentlessly scrutinized and there isn't this sense and commitment for the, you know, the figurehead to be part of the body and, or that, you know, that celebrity pastor to be part of the body, then, you know, not every guy does this, but it's just an unhealthy, unhelpful way to live. And so in some ways, even if a guy doesn't fall into gross sin, it's still an unhealthy way to live. And one of the sort of things that this exposes is an unhealthy ecclesiology within much of evangelicalism and just even how we think about as leaders living within community. And again, that doesn't solve all the issues. There's still, you know, the sin was in his heart, But if we're going to sort of reestablish the institutional credibility of the evangelical church, we got to get better at this in many, many ways.
Yeah. Chris, going back to the accountability factor, I think it's really important for us to think about the institutional restoration of accountability and doing better. But I also think it's on us individually as ministers to be as accountable as we possibly can. And in other words, what I'm saying there is I'm as accountable as I kind of want to be, right? So that comes with ministry. I'm as above reproach as I choose to be. And at some point, Ravi's life, there was this chasm that had to have been built almost on purpose to get to this kind of a place. And I just think that's kind of the sobering warning I had, you know, because what we want to do is when we read stuff like this is go, well, could have been you. And you're like, yeah, it could have been. And at the same time, no, it won't. I'm going to resolve to be to be deeply accountable. And this is hugely important for pastors. Like, what you do not get the privilege of not being accountable. And you have to have this teachable, humble, let me come to you with really weird things that are happening in my life kind of accountability.
Yeah. And there's an inclination in our hearts that wants to believe that there's a structure that could fix these kinds of things or keep these kinds of things from happening. That if there was just a better board or better accountability or whatever, I don't know that there's a structure that can mitigate against human sin. Certainly there's not. And so the point here that you're making, Dusty, is, hey, so if someone wants to hide their sin, they're going to choose to hide it. And there might be a structure that just sort of like brings it into the light. But man, we all know our own ability to deceive ourselves and the capacity that people have to deceive others. So I guess I'm speaking to your point there, Chris, of like, yes, we have to get better at the way we do accountability within the evangelical church. And I think we also have to embrace what you just said, Dusty, that like this never gets beyond each of our own commitment to personal integrity before God and before one another.
I completely agree. Completely agree. Those two things have to work in tandem. One of the things that I read recently, and someone just kind of, they were doing it a very respectful way, but they were kind of giving assessment of even Ravi's ministry and really being appreciative for how he's able to enter into certain spaces and talk about the Christian faith and engage with philosophical questions. But what they were noticing is that when you listen to Ravi talk, it was all intellectual. Like there wasn't this kind of like sense of this guy communes with the Lord. This guy has, there's a fire. Even when he talked about the gospel, that it was a lived reality and a communion with the Lord. And what they were just highlighting is that there's also a danger too when our faith becomes intellectual. Even if we're super sharp and we have, you know, we can understand all these philosophies and how to speak the gospel into all these different spaces and really have even a good reputation as far as the way that I'm winsome, like all of those things that we value, if there isn't underneath all of that a deep communion with the Lord, not only is that going to kind of shrivel our souls, it is actually going to come out. Like people who are actually paying attention in particular ways are going to see through it eventually. And so there might be some people who are wowed with our well-reasoned arguments and our ability to articulate the gospel. But I think the spiritually sensitive and the people who are communing with the Lord eventually are going to say, hey, there feels to be something impersonal or just intellectual. And so now, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, and we see, you know, there was this deep, deep, dark life of sin going on. And so he wasn't communing with the Lord. But it is interesting too of if we, you know, we don't have to go that dark and that, you know, significant in this, but just even for us as leaders who do talk about the gospel, who are engaging people, that hey, if someone were to really sort of analyze and listen to you talk, would they not only say, wow, that's a great argument or a great winsome articulation, but could they discern underneath that, man, this guy knows Jesus. This gal knows Jesus. There's like a communing with the Lord that's underneath all of that too. That was convicting to me when I was reading that article. It's like, wow, I could be the most winsome pastor in Bellevue, Nebraska.
You could be the Bovink Pro.
I could be the Bovink Pro, which life goals. But may it never be said that, man, I don't get this sense, Chris, that you're actually communing with God. And so that, you know, that piece of this too was very provoking for me.
Exactly. Right on to what you're saying. That doesn't help me very much because it just triggers my cynicism. Because I'm the guy that's just going to want to see through everyone anyway. And so yeah. I think that can take me to pretty dark places because I just start to think, yeah, actually probably everyone that I respect and appreciate has I can start to go, actually everybody I've ever heard is only intellectual. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I don't want to take away the wisdom of what you're saying, but I'm just saying, I think there's some of us that can take us to dark places when we start going, well, does this person really commune with the Lord? Probably not. You know, brain tends to do a little bit in moments like this is just to like, I kind of get to that Elijah place where I'm like, there's no one left, Lord. They've all bowed the knee to Baal. And it becomes really not good for my charity toward other human beings, you know, and toward other leaders.
And to also be fair, I think we have to be careful about what that means too, because if you're equating deep communion with the Lord with like some kind of fire or zeal, a way of talking about things that are, that has a particular emotive aspect to it, I think that's not what I'm talking about. It, and some of that too, doesn't come out unless you actually know somebody or there's, I mean, so I completely take your caveat and your warning there. It's like, this is not a, hey, let's be overly analytical of people and say, do you really commune with the Lord? But I think this is more of a, for self-assessment in many ways of like, where am I as a person who, if especially if my primary job and role really is to share the gospel and talk with non-Christians and disciple, that I'm not just focused on the winsomeness or the intellectual side of it or the, you know, that level of engagement, which is again, super, super important, but we really do, you know, follow that model that the Apostle Paul laid down. I mean, this guy was engaging philosophers in Athens, but this guy was also had this, you know, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection. I mean, he just had this deep communion with the Lord. So that, may this be something that's more about, hey, how are we, you know, our own walk with the Lord and our own ministry.
Yeah.
I think there is, you know, Bob, to what you just said in response to Chris about your cynicism, I do think the philosophical, intellectual thinkers, there's still something about those guys when the gospel's melting their heart.
Yeah.
And but what's weird about it is you have to kind of have a sense of it, right? But you do have a sense of it when it's off and it's just intellectual and it's just winsome thinking.
Yeah, I agree with you. But it's funny to me because it's easy to game tape stuff like this and say, oh yeah, Ravi kind of was that way, but no one was saying that 10 years ago.
Right.
Nobody was going like, hey Ravi, I don't sense that you commune with the Lord well, because you look at it in hindsight and you can kind of sniff it out, but I don't know that it's right there on the surface. And so what I think I'm trying to express is I have a tendency to want to see through and believe that there's something dark under the surface. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes I have to actually mitigate against that.
Sure.
And believe the best about people. Sometimes it's more challenging for me.
Well, and this, I mean, back to my point too, of we have to be careful not to let this color our perspective of all gospel ministry.
Right. I think it can do that.
Mm-hmm. And that's a really good comment. I even want to say, I wouldn't let it color even the influence that Ravi's ministry had on you personally. Like that is the Lord's ministry to you, not just, even though it came through him and now this is all out and it's broken. But at the same time, that doesn't discredit what the Lord's work has done through him.
Bethany, in situations like this, and again, this has happened so many times over the past few years, it seems like, but especially in situations like this where there's a man abusing power, taking advantage of people, it's always the women who hurt, right? Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about, you know, to Chris's point of, hey, how does our tribe, the evangelical tribe, do better here? What in moments like this do you as a woman feel and think about, man, we have got to grow in, in how we... this is the wrong way to say it, but is there a way to see these things before they happen, or to not be here picking up a bunch of pieces, but to be more proactive on the front end?
I mean, I think my first like gut reaction is to just listen to women when they bring complaints or allegations of things like this to the surface. I think it's, yeah, just listening to women and believing them and talking to them about this. And I don't know, I think this could be one of those situations where, you know, it's scary and you don't want something like this to happen in your organization or whatever. And so if, you know, stuff like that does come up, listen to them, even if you don't necessarily know how to respond.
That because as you're talking, I'm thinking like, if this were to happen in an organization, I'd be like, okay, I'm not sure what to do with this right now. We're talking about Chris Hemmelman Ministries, and 100 of us work here.
Yeah.
And it's Chris Hemmelman Ministries, you know?
Yeah. It takes a lot of humility for an organization to admit that this could happen on their watch. And, you know, kind of going back to your point before, Bob, of wanting to do the right thing and getting to that place of doing it. And yeah, they messed up royally early on, but for an organization to take the posture immediately of, this is heavy, this is serious, we're gonna do our due diligence and trust the Lord come what may. In some ways easier said than done, but this is where, you know, man, integrity, really, and trusting in God in the midst of this really becomes important, because if it does mean the end of a particular ministry, or, you know, things crumbling and falling apart, by God's grace, we have to be, the truth and righteousness and justice need to be more important than our paychecks. And again, I say that sitting here, not with that threat hanging over, you know, our church or an organization I work for, but at the end of the day, this is where our faith and trust in God has to matter. And so listening and believing, even when it's hard, mm-hmm. can imagine, even when it may mean a threat to the bottom line, becomes super important.
Well, in the backstory here that we should probably share, there was a woman who came forward in 2017 with allegations of sexual misconduct against Ravi. Ravi's board basically went to Ravi and was like, hey, did this happen? He filed a countersuit against the woman and basically forced her into a non-disclosure agreement, and that sort of just quieted everything down. And then what happened was there was an atheist blogger who just started raising awareness online of certain things about Ravi Zacharias's character, specifically the fact that he was a part owner of two day spas in Florida, which this guy just thought, that's kind of odd. I thought this guy was a Christian apologist. I think it's weird that he owns day spas. Someone should look into this. And what happened was there were a few women who went onto this blog and heard the story that had been, or heard allegations that had been brought forward and said, hey, that sounds familiar. That sounds like my story. And so basically enough of those people came forward that the board then had to say, okay, we need to look into something here. And so it did highlight that initial failure to listen well to the first person who brought those allegations forward, and kind of the board not doing their job well. And so to dial the clock back, I don't want to give the impression here, I feel like I did start off maybe with a little too much positivity saying, good for them, they've released the report. When in reality, like they dropped the ball in some serious ways and failed miserably in the initial parts of this. And so that needs to be said, because it is a failure, and it's unfortunate that it took some outside blogger who, you know, doesn't share our faith in Christ, yeah. to get people to take seriously what was going on here.
It's a little like God sending the Babylonians to judge Israel. It's like God sending the atheists to do our work for us.
Yeah. To take down the apologetics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe let's end the podcast here. Dusty, you mentioned this is, cause I think this is where a lot of people find themselves, just like, okay, so can I, like, is it okay for me to still have benefited in some way from Ravi Zacharias's ministry or not? Like, how should I reckon with a moment like this? If I have both the anger that we've talked about the injustice and the depravity and the wickedness of what happened here, and also some measure of like, and I heard him say something once that was helpful to me, you know, what do I do with that tension?
My perspective on that is you don't have to burn all the books and get rid of all the MP3s. If the Lord has used somebody's work in your own life and soul, and it was very formative, see that as God's grace to you.
One of the things Femi mentions in the article he wrote is basically to say that like, hey, we need to see this as God ministering to us through a flawed person. And that allows us to receive God's grace that we gained through that person's ministry without making that person a hero or putting them on a platform, and the ability to separate those things and say, the Lord did bless me in certain ways through this person's ministry. And now that I know what I know, I can't view this person in the same way. And I need to rightly condemn the wickedness of the behavior they were involved in and reassess my sort of appreciation of them in light of that. Listeners, we will post a couple articles about this. Maybe you've already read all that you want to read, but we'll post a link both to the Femi's article and also to the report that Ravi Zacharias International Ministries released. It's fairly graphic, and so make sure that you want to know the details if you go there to read it. But for the sake of transparency and again, owning the responsibility that the church has to be straightforward about these things. I think it's good for everyone to know where they can go read that and find out the details and know what happened, both for the sake of understanding the situation and also for the sake of guarding our own hearts and doing a better job in our own ministries and churches of guarding against things like this. Sort of a weighty topic to talk about. Thanks to the listener who said, hey, would you guys talk about this? And I hope that this has been helpful in helping us think through some of the complexities and sadness of a moment like this and a situation like this.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.